Good morning, Steve Dale. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Is your dog dirty? Does your dog need a bath? I have the solution for you. Well, it's really a problem, especially since some of the grooming facilities have been closed. I have all the answers. But right now, I am being joined by Dr. Fia Jokala, a resident to be boarded soon as a veterinary behaviorist, and Stephen Frost, a dog trainer just outside Chicago, of great renown. So a dog trainer also of great renown, but for all the wrong reasons. His name is Jeff Gelman, and he was scheduled to come to Chicago. There's still some fear, to be honest with you, that he may still come at some secret location. But where he was scheduled to go, they said, okay, we've canceled because there was such an outcry because of his training methods. Now, I think if you ask 10 dog trainers how to train dogs, you get 55 different answers, but sometimes some methods are just so over the top. And what he does by his own videos, personally, I think is animal cruelty. And potentially he could be arrested, in my personal opinion. I'm not law enforcement and I'm not an attorney, but throwing things at dogs as a way to quote-unquote train dogs, he calls it boinking, where he rolls up a towel, a big towel, like a beach towel, and rubber bands it so it holds together. And when the dog isn't looking, you throw it over the dog's head. How is that training a dog? It may get the dog not to do something, potentially. It will certainly impact the human-animal bond. I mean, how can that dog trust a person who's going to throw a towel at a dog? I mean, this is not even dog training, I don't believe, in 1940. I wasn't around then, but I don't even think those kinds of things were done back then. So a group of us got together and said, you know, this isn't right. Chicago's got to say, we don't want him here. We did, very loud and clear, and that's when the place that was supposed to host him said, okay, we're not going to host him. And our concern is, we wonder if he's going to pop up somewhere at some super secret location. My question is, who goes to somebody like that? And there's people that do, and I don't get that at all. So let's talk about dog training, and let's talk about what's right or not right. Dr. Jokala, you saw the videos too, and when you saw him, did you salivate in a way saying trainers like this actually bring in more business to me because their dogs are going to have more problems?
Yes, sadly, the dogs that come to me, the majority of my patients have in some way been shocked by people that call themselves professional trainers. And the people that come with them, the people that love these dogs, they still do love their dog. They're desperate for help. And they hear a big story about how if we use force or pain, intimidation, we can get your dog better. And they don't even use those words. They use a lot of twisted up buzzwords that make it sound like it's something that it isn't. So the people that do go to these trainers, they just want to help their dog. They're afraid, they're stressed, they're anxious, but they get convinced in some way that, I mean, really good people get convinced that putting a shock collar on and shocking their dog is going to help.
I want to talk about that for a bit. So we're talking about those collars that actually give a dog a shock. They're called e-collars or electronic collars. You once told me that, you'll have to tell me again, but a significant percent of your dog business is from people who have used shock collars and have created all sorts of problems. So then now they go to a real professional who is you, a veterinary behaviorist, or about to be a boarded veterinary behaviorist.
Yes. I would have my caseload might be significantly decreased, and I would be more than happy to go ahead and retire early if I didn't have to see these dogs that are damaged. And there's really nothing more damaging than shock. Certainly any kind of force or physical punishment. And these animals are so much harder to treat because I'm looked at as, well, I only go to her as a last resort. Let's go try these other things. And the people are so desperate for a quick fix. They also promise, I'll guarantee that your dog won't do something. And so by the time they get to me, it's going to be much more difficult to help that dog. And in all honesty, sometimes they are so damaged from their training methods that they're not safe for their family to live with. And it's not because the family doesn't love the dog. They truly become so unsafe from the fear that's been instilled in them that, you know, they can't stay in the home. And it's not really a option to rehome a dog like that to somebody else's family. If this one family that loves them can't do it, another family's not going to be able to do it any better. And it's because of the damage. And there's certainly other things that cause behavior problems. It, you know, there certainly are other life experiences and genetics and how they were raised. There's all those things. But no matter what your dog may be struggling with, if you use punishment and especially punishment that causes pain or force or intimidation, those kinds of methods, it's only going to make your problem so much worse and sadly the dog so much more dangerous.
So, Stephen, you're a dog trainer, and I'll tell you, I heard a little bit from the other side, other trainers or people who believe in this sort of thing. And one of the notes said, okay, if it's not an electronic collar and if you're not using force, how in the world can you work with an aggressive dog? Well, I'm asking you that question because you work with aggressive dogs all the time.
Yeah, so a lot of what we look at is really, firstly, just trying to figure out what kind of behavior is the dog offering, what's the motivation behind the behavior, what kind of potentially even clinical disorders, and that's where a behavior-savvy veterinarian or a board-certified veterinary behaviorist can certainly come into play here. But we really look at utilizing a lot of scientifically sound principles to engage often in systematic counter-conditioning, changing around the emotional state that often drives the behavior, and doing so with a very well-articulated training and treatment plan that even though takes significant time and takes significant work, can address the emotional response that's driving the behavior, and on top of that, can empower this animal through reinforcement-based strategies with more appropriate coping strategies. What dogs like to try to do in many cases is offer behavior that they can use to exhibit control over their environment to earn a positive consequence. And many times over in aggression, they're exhibiting that behavior to try to discontinue something that's unwanted or extremely unpleasant for them. And if we can change around that emotional response while simultaneously giving them behavior that they can and should be doing and teach them that it's going to work out very well for them if they do so, we often see a lot of that behavior fall by the wayside, and we're able to really build a nice bond with the owner, and we're able to teach that dog that aggression is just not a necessary coping strategy in that situation.
And you're able to do this without throwing things at the dog, but you're also able to do this without using prong collars necessarily, without using electronic collars ever. Is that correct that there is simply, today, we know, a better and more humane way to do this?
Absolutely. I mean, in the absolute simplest sense, it's just not required. Aversives are not required to train and treat not only a dog, but any animal. And that's why we'll see in major aquatic and zoological institutions, they're not using aversives on their whales. They're not using aversives on their lions, on their tigers, on their bears, on their hawks, on their eagles, on their falcons. And we just don't simply need it for dogs either.
Yeah, it would be hard to put a collar around a tiger's neck and a leash and say, come on, you don't do this, I'm going to yank you down. And that's one of the things that this one trainer, I've seen him do it on video. I'm only repeating. And by the way, go to my website, stevedale.tv, or go to YouTube and type in Jeff Gelman's name. The thing, though, is Dr. Jokola, he's not the only trainer doing this sort of thing.
No, unfortunately, it's, I would say, the world of dog training is suffering from a pandemic, that the use of shock and punishment, prong collars, it's everywhere. It's around the world, although there are some countries that actually ban the use of like a shock collar. It's
yes.
Just hard to get that done. And I think the other thing is got to understand why some dogs are quote-unquote misbehaving or being aggressive. It's from fear. So if you are afraid and someone causes you pain, are you going to be more or less afraid? They're not understanding why the animal is behaving that way. And the scientific literature just keeps growing, where studies have been done and they compared things. The data is available now, probably in the last 20 years, it's exploded, that shows how these kinds of punishment training, where it's painful. It's not like everybody uses a little bit of punishment. We punish ourselves. We punish our children sometimes, but we're not bonking them over the head and we're not shocking them. But there's so much literature now out there in the scientific world that shows the great harm this is doing to pets.
All right.
And
well,
that those methods absolutely do not make animals get better faster, any of those kinds of stories that they tell these desperate pet owners that they promise that they can do.
But what this does do is inhibit behavior. And when we come back, we'll talk about exactly what I mean by that. Dr. Fia Jokola is here. And Stephen Frost is here as well, and they will be here when we come back. Steve Dale back with you on WGN Radio. We're talking about choosing a dog trainer and what not to do as well as what to do. Dr. Fia Jokola is here with dog trainer Stephen Frost. Stephen, we were talking about, yeah, you can change a dog's behavior temporarily, but what are you really doing?
Yeah, so to speak to that, one of the strengths, which is a relative term of punishment, is that with enough force, with enough fear, with enough intimidation, with enough downright pain and discomfort, you can immediately suppress a behavior. But at the same time, that isn't emotionally sustainable for that pet. And what a lot of traditional or punishment-based trainers fail to realize, and even owners as well, is that it's emotions that often drive behavior, and it's emotions, strong emotions, that drive often significant behavior like aggression. So if we only punish you when you do the behavior, but you only do the behavior when a certain situation arises, when a certain individual is around, when you're around another dog, well, we're only actually then correcting you when that other dog is around. And if you're already doing this because you're afraid or you have a dislike of other dogs, and now we're pairing that with punishment, yes, we might immediately suppress that behavior, but what we're almost overwhelmingly likely to see is a resurgence of that problem behavior that is now tenfold worse because we've really paired that initial trigger with discomfort, with pain, with something that's extremely
sure.
aversive, such as shock or physical correction, such as throwing something heavy at a dog's head.
So, Dr. Jokola, quickly, the impossible question. Why do people make that choice when I would think they'd know in the pit of their stomach that throwing things, for example, at a dog just doesn't seem like a good idea?
Yes, it would seem they would know, but I think that's the trick in some of these trainers is that they cover it up. And so my big tip of advice is that never let your dog be trained out of your sight. You need to build a relationship. That's what training is about anyway, to send it off, say, to a boot camp where you have no idea what they're doing. And oftentimes they're very sneaky about it. So.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to have your dog trained, go there and be part of the process.
Absolutely. Dr. Jokola, thank you so very much. Stephen Frost, always good to talk to you as well. I'm hopeful that we really did succeed at keeping this guy outside, out of the Chicago area. Countries, nations have said, you can't come here. They did that in England. They did that in Ireland, and for all the right reasons, that his approach is so way over the top. There's no question. And I would argue, personally, in some places, what I've seen him do on his own videos, that's animal abuse. I mean, worthy of arrest, animal abuse. Paul Fehrenbacher is the co-founder and chief mutt at Mutt Jackson. We'll explain what that is in a moment. He is on the board of the Montrose Dog Beach, which we'll get an update on. And also on the board of Chicago Canine Rescue, a great shelter in Chicago. How's Chicago Canine Rescue doing through all this, Paul?
You know what? CCR, Chicago Canine Rescue, has actually done, fortunately, very well. Dog adoptions, as you probably know, Steve, are at an all-time high. And the shelter is actually moving dogs in and out and making a lot of parents happy with a furry family member headed their way.
Excellent. But the dog beach, Montrose Dog Beach, a giant expanse of dog beach isn't doing quite as well. One issue is the lake level that continues to rise and some storms that have reduced fencing to rubbish. But in addition to that, of course, there's the COVID that and our mayor has said all beaches closed, and that includes dog beach as well. So tell me the story for Montrose Dog Beach. You hope to be up and running by, you don't know, I guess.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the case. Montrose Dog Beach, which I call Chicago's slice of heaven, it's the busiest dog beach in the United States, potentially the busiest in the world, especially during the summer. has been closed since COVID hit due to the mayor's restrictions. And as you mentioned, Steve, there were a combination of other things with the lake level being high and some fencing that's accumulated a lot of sand due to storms that need to be replaced. So the hope is that even though my company, Mutt Jackson, won't have our dog washes operational at Montrose Dog Beach this summer, that we can come together with the likes of Alderman Kappelman's team and hopefully the mayor's office and the park district so that during the off season, we can do what it takes to make Montrose Dog Beach operational, in some ways, I think, even better by replacing fencing in a way that will increase the size of the dog beach, improving on the boardwalk that would have to happen regardless of the storms, et cetera. So really taking advantage during the off season to make Montrose Dog Beach, which is such a crown jewel of Chicago, ready to rock and roll come spring of 2021.
But Paul, even if dogs don't go to the dog beach, dogs still get dirty. And now you have the solution for all of Chicago's dirty dogs.
Oh, we do. We're really excited about it. I brought it from Wilmington, North Carolina to Chicago 2 weeks ago. It is the mobile Mutt Jackson wash. So we took one of the dog washes that we have at Montrose Dog Beach and put it on the back of a trailer, and it actually looks really slick. You can see it in person at Puptown for the remainder of September and hopefully into October if the weather holds. Puptown is one of the busiest dog beaches or dog parks on the north side in Uptown. And what's really cool about this mobile Mutt Jackson wash, Steve, is that we can park it anywhere. It has a generator for power, has over a 400-gallon water tank and receptacle tank. So it has the capacity to really go anywhere. We're going to test it the rest of this season at Puptown, and if everything goes as planned, we'll be able to maneuver it on a set schedule throughout dog parks all around Chicago.
And that is very cool. You'd be able to go to a website or something like that and see the schedule of where you can get your dog washed in a very mobile and easy way. And what's more, you do cater to dogs of every size, every breed, every mix, I believe. And there is also something, as I recall, special about the shampoo.
Yeah, well, all of our shampoos are biodegradable and earth-friendly, and they smell so, so good. And so, like you said, anything from a Chihuahua to a Great Dane can be washed very efficiently in our K9000. The water comes out warm, even on our mobile unit. We have a hot water heater. And then you can also treat your pups to the likes of a Mutsicle or other dog treats after the wash. Last thing I'll mention regarding the mobile wash at Puptown is we hope to hold at least one dog yoga event before winter hits. So we're just really trying to make the most of a difficult situation like everyone is right now.
Is there a website people can go to?
You can go to muttjackson.com. You can also follow us on Instagram and Facebook. We'll be sure to update the hours of operation, events we have going on. We also have some year-round locations that are about ready to open, Steve, where we call them passive income stream, where it doesn't have any labor there. Via time door, people can access our washes from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m.
It sounds good.
Wash your pups.
We have one
going on in Harlem at Harlem Irving Park Plaza, and we hope to open one up in Arlington Heights in the near future.
Excellent. Thank you, Paul Fehrenbacher of Mutt Jackson, who smells oh so good for a reason. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you very much, Steve. It's great talking to you.
Steve Dales, Pet World, WGN. A new study from Banfield Pet Hospital reveals that about 75 million pets in the U.S. may not have access to veterinary care by 2030. And there's lots of reasons for that. So put that fact aside for a moment and let me add this. Nearly 90% of veterinary professionals are Caucasian, white Americans. I'm not sure how you say that. Most are women, but most are certainly not a minority. So what Banfield and Royal Canin, the pet food company, have done is made a promise. And I was there when they made it. It's called the Banfield Leadership Summit, where leadership from industry all come together at this one meeting. This year it was a virtual meeting. It's an amazing event. But Banfield said they want increased representation within Banfield, within their hospitals, by ensuring that 30% or more of their veterinarians and other veterinary professionals, such as technicians and nurses, are African American, indigenous people, Hispanic, whatever the case may be, by 2030. I love that. And you know, veterinary medicine needs that. So of all the medical professions, veterinary medicine, it turns out, is the least diverse, for which there are many reasons for. Strengthening the pipeline of African-American veterinarians also by partnering with Mars Veterinary Health, Royal Canin, and Tuskegee University College of Veterinary Medicine, Banfield and Royal Canin are supporting a student fund with a whole lot of money. And that's important because about a third, or more than a third actually, of veterinary students who are of color graduate from this particular veterinary school. So getting that financial aid can make or break whether they go to veterinary school in the first place. That and a $1 million investment over the next year in equity, inclusion, and diversity efforts to increase representation, offer training, and support industry efforts, as well as creating a coalition of other industry partners. So far, the American Veterinary Medical Association signed on, as have others. Boy, this is a really good thing. And it turns out that a lot of people in neighborhoods in Chicago and elsewhere who happen to be African American at a young age want to consider veterinary medicine. They love animals. A lot of people, a lot of kids love animals and they want to become a veterinarian. Well, there isn't that opportunity necessarily. And now Banfield and Royal Canin are saying, we're going to create opportunities for you. Back next week with Alderman Brian Hopkins talking about why no dogs, cats, or rabbits should be ever sold at pet stores.